What's going on, everybody? Welcome in. This is Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Tuesday edition of the show. Thanks for tuning in, as always. It's episode number 2 of the week. We're moving on to Buffalo. And we're going to move past that Dallas game, although we're going to get into segment 2, the return of stock up, stock down. So we'll take one last look at that 37-10 blowout loss on Sunday Night Football, but then it's time to look forward here. The Eagles have a big matchup on Sunday at New Era Field in Orchard Park, New York, against the 5-1 Buffalo Bills, and it's where me and Gino are living right now. We're going to be at the game, so we're excited to talk about this matchup, and we got you covered all throughout the week. We should have Crossover Wednesday with Joe Marino of Locked On Bills tomorrow. Then we have Derek Kramer on of WGR Sports Radio 550 on Thursday, and we might have some special guests that a lot of Eagles fans know either Friday or Saturday. Not going to say who, but just stay tuned. That should be a fun episode if we can hook up with those guys. Let's bring in my co-host Gino Camilleri. Gino, how you feeling today, man? I work the overnight, so I kind of woke up to a bunch of trades going down today. Two wide receivers moving in Mohamed Sanu and Emmanuel Sanders. And, you know, Gerrion Conley went yesterday, got traded from Oakland. So how are you feeling about where the Eagles are at right now, not making any trades? Are you getting antsy, or based on the value that these teams gave up for the likes of Sanu and Sanders, are you content right now?
Yeah, as it stands, I'm honestly pretty happy with the direction that things are trending. I mean, Mohamed Sanu, he's a 30-year-old wide receiver. He's a good player in his own right. That's a good wide receiver threat to add to that Patriots offense. I feel like he's the perfect fit there, like a very good route-running wide receiver.
Exactly. Second what is a Belichick. Lot, though, right? I mean, oh my gosh. I don't know, am I wrong? Is Sanu better?
I mean, I think Sanu, if he wasn't on two teams with A.J. Green and Julio Jones, yeah, like fair. He's a number one receiver on a lot of other teams. Like, honestly, right now, I would take him. I mean, but at a 30-year-old price, no way. Same with Emmanuel Sanders. Like, I love the vertical element. I don't think he's a Golden Tate 2.0, but the idea of trading for a 30-something-year-old wide receiver just for the sake of it just doesn't sit well with me. I tweeted out today, and I've been tweeting out players that I think fit this mold for the Eagles better is a player that's coming off of his first contract, he's looking to get paid, and he just needs a change of scenery. Guys like Robbie Anderson and Leonard Williams from the Jets ring a bell to me, and both of their names have circulated around the Eagles. So those are two guys that I would love to look at. There are plenty of other names. I mentioned Xavien Howard. I think I mentioned that to you. Yeah. Young corner for Miami that they can look at. Just pieces that you can build with but also impact immediate needs. And the thing with this is, like, what you're doing now in the roster that you have now, cutting Akeem Spence and Orlando Scandrick, I mean, that doesn't, like, move the needle for me in making a change, you know? That,
right, yeah.
That's not like a firing Mike Groh or cutting Nelson Aguilar type move. Yeah, exactly. Something's going to happen. I mean, it's close. I like the way things are trending. I just think there are a couple more moves that are going to happen, and the Eagles hopefully will be one of them. Benjamin Albright, who's an insider for the Denver Broncos, said that the Eagles were chatting with them about Chris Harris, older player, but cornerback. You tend to see
them
hold up a little bit longer. We were who'd we mention?
Terrence Newman. Yeah, he played till he was like 50 years old. So, I mean, and with Harris, too, he's versatile.
Tremont Williams, too.
Yeah, he can play on the outside and in the slot. So, I don't know, Gino, I'm more gearing towards making a move on defense. I still like the offense's chances
Absolutely.
Of rebounding with what they have. I think if Doug Peterson's play calling gets better, I think when DeSean Jackson does inevitably return, even with whatever percentage of health that he's at, I think if the offensive line plays better than they did last week, I don't know. I've seen the offense this year be more consistent than the defense. So if I can get a Leonard Williams next to Fletcher Cox, even with Malik Jackson coming back next year, like you said before the show, I mean, with another injury, he's had a couple injuries the past few years. He's an older player. You know, I would love to have a young defensive tackle. I mean, we were talking about like a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, bringing him in even after bringing in Malik Jackson.
Right.
Look what he's doing with Tennessee. So if you can get a Williams, or hell, even like if Cincinnati is considering moving Geno Atkins, I mean, that guy had a couple sacks on Sunday. If I can get him next to Cox or Chris Harris, or if they can revisit Patrick Peterson, I'm just more inclined to give
Yannick
up
Ngakoue.
Yeah, right. Someone like that.
Imagine,
I mean,
that.
Oh my gosh. If I'm going to spend some significant capital, if I'm going to spend multiple, you know, pretty high picks, I don't want it to be on a guy like Emmanuel Sanders, who you know, he's not Golden Tate, but he has played most of his career in the slot. He's in the final year of his contract. He's had major injuries before. I agree with you. That feels like just making a move just to make a move. And, like, if Sanu's going for a second, if Sanders is going for a third and a fourth, I mean, what are the Bengals going to command for A.J. Green? I just don't like what the receiver market is looking to be shaping up at, you know, a week before the deadline. The deadline is officially a week from today. So if this is the way receiver looks, I don't know, man. I'm just going to pray that I see something from Aguilar over the past couple of years that we saw, or Arcega Whiteside gets it going in the second half of the year, or DeSean Jackson comes back. That's just my approach right now, you know, a week before the deadline is. More so, I think the focus should be on defense.
I'm there with you. I mean, we've been pounding the table. I would love a guy like Leonard Williams if you can get him at a reasonable rate, but you're going to have to pay him. But the biggest question is, I still think cornerback is the play. I mean, you can't do nothing there.
Think it's got to be done.
That's the position that I don't want to rental. That's the one thing. Like, if you're going to bring in Chris Harris, you at least have to have a 2 to 3 year extension in mind.
Sure,
anybody
yeah.
you bring in, they're not rental players. You can't do what you did with Golden Tate last year. I just thought that was a poor play.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to need them next year. I mean,
yeah.
Mills is a free agent. Darby's a free agent. They have given up on
exactly.
Sidney Jones, and they clearly don't believe in Rasul Douglas. So, yeah, I mean, you have, what, Avante Maddox that you believe in next year? So I'm with you. They got to it's what you said yesterday. Even with the age of Harris, at this deadline, you want a guy that you can – sure, I'm good with a rental if I can give up a fourth-round pick and get that back in the compensatory formula over the offseason. But ideally, you want a guy here that you get for now and for the next – you know, for the foreseeable future, like Amari Cooper from Dallas last year.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what the thing about this is. And when you're looking at this roster, I've heard the word rebuild talked about, and
that's
we are the farthest thing from a rebuild.
No way, yeah.
We can look at living here in Buffalo. Lou and I, we are Bills fans. Or not Bills fans. Oh, my God, what am I saying? We're talking about the Bills. We are Sabres fans. We are not Bills fans. I've
right.
not been a Bills fan in 19-plus years. I am not a Bills fan. But we look at the Sabres. They had the last 4 years. They were in this mode of getting through a rebuild. They had what the worst season in NHL history before it was upended by the Colorado Avalanche. They had a 10-year stretch where they didn't even come close to making the playoffs. And in 2017, the start was, we have generational players. Can we get to the playoffs? Didn't do it in 17. Didn't do it in 18. This offseason, their general manager, Jason Botterill, does a couple hockey moves, moves some contracts out, brings some veterans in, stabilizes a young core, and now they have reshaped their roster a little bit, and they're, what, second or third in the NHL right mm-hmm. now? It doesn't take much when you have the pieces there. You have a core. You have all these guys locked up through 2021 and 2022. You have Carson Wentz. You have Fletcher Cox, Zach Ertz. You have Dallas Goedert, all
Lane
your
Johnson,
young guys.
Brandon
Lane
Brooks.
John,
I mean,
yeah,
look, this core is intact, and they're under contract. Like, this is not something where you don't have the pieces, or the pieces have, like, you know, come over the hill and they're regressing now significantly. That is not where this Eagles team is at, right? I feel
no,
like it's the supporting cast is what is
absolutely.
In coaching. Mm-hmm. I would even consider supporting cast, including the coordinators. It's what's pulling this team down right now at 3-4.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you look at that 2017 season and the 2018 season and the 2019 season. There were three different set of veteran free agents that they have acquired. 2017, the hit rate was near 100%. You look at Torrey
True.
Smith, absolute gem. You look at Jay Ajayi, when you traded for him, absolute gem. LeGarrette Blount, Tammy Jernigan, absolute gems. Last year, you bring back Jernigan, isn't as healthy. You have they bring back Corey Graham. Doesn't perform the way
oh, we can't forget about
Mike
Chris
Wallace.
Long, too. I mean, remember
Chris
Long we brought in, too.
Exactly. So now you did it in 2019. The veterans didn't work out again. You still have the base of the roster. We're just addressing those positions that you and I were talking about back in April. But once again, things didn't work out. Hey, and sometimes you have to adapt. And the best GMs, the best coaches, and the best organizations adapt. Who is the best chameleon in the NFL? Bill Belichick. You will never know flaws in his roster because he learns how to cover them up, and very quickly. The thing with this Eagles roster and this Eagles franchise is they haven't done that in a great fashion since 2017, and they haven't fixed these areas quickly. Now is the time that you can. Corner can be fixed. Opening up the field and getting the offense going can be fixed. It's just one or two moves. I don't really think you need to send big contracts out of time. I don't think that's the case at all. You have the tools there. This roster is about what it was last year when you were injured and we were talking about making trades. You're one game out of first place. What are we even debating? This team needs to get out.
I think some people act like this core is 35 years old across the board, and that these guys are regressing. But then I watch Fletcher Cox. I mean, Fletcher Cox is not an old player in the NFL. Zach Ertz is not an old player in the NFL. Lane Johnson, smack dab in the middle of his prime. Brandon Brooks is an older player, but he's still, to me, in the prime years of he's better than he's ever been this year, coming off a torn Achilles. Even Brandon Graham, he's at the twilight of his career, but pass rushers could play. I mean, he's 31 years old. Look, Dwight Freeney played for another 4 years at a high level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they are an older roster. They're the second oldest roster in the league, only behind New England. But they're not a roster of their entire core is made up of players that are at the end of their career. I just think it's an overreaction to them being at 3-4. And I was being a little irresponsible yesterday, Gino, at 4 a.m. I'm just sitting there thinking about the year and how they're 3-4. And, you know, with all of this being said, and it's not fair to put the blame on these two guys, but if two players catch a football each, they're 5-2. And we're not talking about this. We're talking about them being buyers at the deadline. They are not selling at the deadline. There's drama in the locker room right now. But for me, I think it's more about them losing. I think the losing is causing the drama more so than the drama is causing the losing, or at least I pray that that is the case. And with this stretch coming up, yeah, we got a tough month ahead. But then you look at that schedule down the stretch, and I'm trying to recreate the 2018 magic again, and I'm trying to get a player or two in, because you made the perfect point yesterday. What the deadline players have done for teams over the past couple years, one or two moves has drastically changed the outlook of a lot of rosters. So if I can add Leonard Williams or Chris Harris or Patrick Peterson or Geno Atkins, one of these guys, I'm going for it. Or look, even Robbie Anderson. The Jets to me would be nuts to move Robbie Anderson, but if I can get that guy at 26 years old with that speed, with DeSean Jackson coming back, I mean, sign me up. I'm not hoarding my draft picks right now. I mean, I don't want to give up a 3rd and 4th for a rental 31-year-old, but I certainly still want to be aggressive. I'm not giving up on this season.
Oh, without a doubt. And you look at it right now, and you look at San Francisco. They have a very young roster. They have draft picks. John Lynch is doing a very good job out there. They could have afforded to do that. The Eagles, they have an older roster. They just need a few younger pieces. I think getting veterans out of town and bringing younger players in like Anthony Rush and Huggins and being able to evaluate them in front of your eyes, that's a smart way to build your roster. Just continuing to add Band-Aid veterans isn't. You have to be able to coach up this talent, and soon enough, we got to be questioning this coaching. I mean, I did it before the offseason questioning Corey Unlin a lot. I still think Corey Unlin might be an issue. I tweeted today that he was one of the few coaches left from the Chip Kelly regime, and those corners were bad then. They're bad now. I said it yesterday. I just think there's a common denominator. I still think you have to shake up something in the coaching staff. Something bigger needs to happen, because this team, there's so many yes men and participation trophies be given out. I mean, what was that crap from Mike Groh today saying backing up Nelson Agholor? No, call him
out. Dude, I can't even watch his press conferences. I can't listen to Jim Schwartz.
I can't listen to Mike Groh. Hold someone accountable. This team needs accountability. They have proven that there are leadership issues. Somebody needs to be held accountable. Look, the world isn't falling. You're 3-4. You were. I completely forgot, Lou, that they were 4-6 last year with 6 games to go. Completely forgot about that. We still have 9 games to go. We have 4 division games, and we have a very friendly 5-game stretch to end the season.
And honestly, these next 2 games are favorable. I mean, they're playing Josh Allen and Mitchell Trubisky. Like, these are the games that you
bounce
back.
These are quarterbacks
back.
You get to. These right. are quarterbacks that hold on to the ball too long. They have bad decision-making issues. Their defenses are holding them in place. If your defense needs a bounce-back game, it's against these quarterbacks, these guys that are going to make bad decisions. The way Dak Prescott has been playing, he has been taking care of the ball, and you have seen that. He has been an efficient quarterback, much more efficient than most of the quarterbacks around the league, and we talk about efficiency in his growth with Carson Wentz. You could say the same about Dak. I mean, you have to give him his hats off to him. I mean, he's done great this year, and he picked apart the Eagles and took care of the football. The Eagles have been shooting themselves in the foot time and time again. Let's make another team do that. And Josh Allen, I mean, we watch the games every week. We're forced to. They're always on CBS here. We see him throw these unbelievably bad passes in the quadruple coverage. This is a game where you can make a quarterback pay for bad decisions. And 100%. You want to retool your defense and bring some pieces in there and scrape away some of the fat, let's say. Now is the time to do so. You have a very winnable Buffalo game. You have a very winnable Chicago game. Right before the bye, this is the time. I mean, you have to do something ASAP.
Absolutely. And we're going to get more into Buffalo coming up. We got something we're going to preview here, segment three. We'll take a first look at the Bills, but coming up next, we got to get into stock up, stock down. Geno started to evaluate getting into the coaches, you know, Nelson Aguilar. We're going to take one final look at that 37-10 blowout loss on Sunday night. Find some positives, find some negatives. It's one of our flagship segments right here in Locked On Eagles coming up. Stock up, stock down. So don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Eagles. Lou Biasi and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Tuesday edition of the show. And guys, we are sponsored by Roman. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, the secret to longer lasting sex. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free 2-day shipping at getroman.com/lockedonNFL. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome in. This is Locked On Eagles, segment two of a Tuesday edition of the podcast. We got into some trade deadline talk on segment one, as there was a couple moves today. Mohamed Sanu traded from the Atlanta Falcons to the New England Patriots for a second-round pick. Emmanuel Sanders goes from the Denver Broncos to the San Francisco 49ers for a third and a fourth. So we'll keep an eye, a close eye, on if Howie Roseman does anything soon. So, you know, if there's an emergency podcast coming, that means the Eagles, they made some moves over the past, you know, 7 days with the trade deadline next Tuesday. We're going to take one last look here at that Cowboys game on Sunday night, Gino, with our stock up, stock down segment. And I guess let's start with the positives, because there weren't a lot for sure, but I do think it was not the game. And tell me if you agree. I don't think it was the game to go after, you know, Howie Roseman's drafting with the young players on the team. I actually thought the only guys I was, you know, encouraged by were some of the recent draft picks. And I think one is Derek Barnett, whose stock is certainly up. I mean, he has 3 sacks in the last 4 weeks. I think that might have been his most impressive sack of his career against Tyron Smith, with that bend, getting underneath Smith's arms, ripping through him to Dak Prescott. I don't know. I thought the young players were actually pretty good on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to point out. And not just players that Howie Roseman is drafted, but players that he is using draft capital to send away. And I could couple that with Hassan Ridgeway and Jordan Howard. I think they both had very good games. And what was Ridgeway for, a conditional seventh, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, it was that
Jordan
last
Howard
pick
for a fourth. Mm-hmm. Ridgeway looked arguably like the best defensive tackle until he got hurt. And Jordan Howard still is third in efficiency in DVOA, according to Football Outsiders. So those two guys have been playing well. I thought Howard ran very, very well in that game. It's just the rest of the guys, nobody played well. I mean, besides that, Hassan Ridgeway, Jordan Howard, there was not many guys that played well.
I think one other guy I was pretty encouraged by, and I would say his stock is up. I don't think it's as strong as, you know, Derek Barnett. I thought Josh Sweat had another really good game. He had a beautiful pressure on Dak Prescott. He just keeps getting better every week. Andre Dillard at left tackle, I don't know what you saw in him, but after going back and watching some of the All-22, I thought his run blocking was awesome. He set up Miles Sanders on that 3rd and 4. We all trashed Doug Peterson for running there, and I agree that he shouldn't have ran there, but the first down was there for the taking. You know, he set up a beautiful trap block in the B gap for Sanders, and Sanders just totally missed the hole. He bounced it to the outside and got tackled for a 1 yard gain. You know, against Robert Quinn, like, that bull rush was tough. Even Trey Thomas was talking about today how he's got to get a little bigger, a little stronger, learn to sink his hips and, you know, power through an end that's trying to bull rush you like that. But, you know, that's a veteran pass rusher. I think he's going to grow. I actually thought he wasn't a problem in pass protection throughout the game. Outside of a couple bad drives, he flies off the snap, off the line of scrimmage, which is awesome. I mean, he's that first initial, you know, that first quick step and getting his feet set and gaining leverage on pass rushers. I was encouraged by Dillard, actually. I don't think it was a big V debut kind of thing like in 2016 against Washington, where he just got destroyed by Ryan Kerrigan all game.
Yeah, they kind of let Dillard kind of do his thing out
there.
They
trusted him, right? I mean, they didn't put Goddard on that side a whole lot.
They sent him to the Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they lined up Goddard there originally, and then they motioned him out right on the first play, if I'm not mistaken, and yeah, he held up pretty well, I have to say that. And you saw the athleticism that you fell in love with when watching him at Washington State, especially on that trap block. You saw him just get around the edge there, and he just closes off, the B gap that Miles Sanders should have went through, which he didn't. But that's the athleticism that you can take, and a coach like Stoutland, that's a ball of clay for him. I mean, the footwork in Dillard, you get him bigger, which you will do from year over year. Once you get him into your weightlifting program, that's something I would expect in year two. But he looked good, and I just want to continue to get him experience, because if Peters is going to continue to come in and out of games, just let Dillard take the reins, man. He did well against a veteran pass rusher in Robert Quinn. That's a tough assignment in a tough place to play on the road in almost a must-win environment. I mean, that's a tough spot to put that kid in, and he did much, much better than that infamous Big V Ryan Kerrigan matchup you talked about a couple years ago, because that was my nightmare. I thought we were going to experience that all over again. But
Winston,
frankly,
Justice against the Giants, where there was like eight sacks. Like,
I was more concerned about Lane Johnson, man. That was a bad game from Lane. He looked bad.
So, all right, let's get to stock down. We'll do a player each, because yesterday we pretty much touched on every downfall of this team. But
we put everybody on the fire there.
Here, we'll give each one of us one more opportunity to attack somebody here. You go for it first.
All right, one more opportunity.
I think I know who you're going to go for again.
I'm not gonna say Voldemort, the one who shall not be named. I refuse to mention his name anymore, but frankly, I mean, just stock down to the leadership of this team. I don't know what's going on, man. It just, nobody's holding anybody accountable. It's not just the players. It's not just the coaches. It's just, I think everybody needs to own up and take a look in the mirror. And you have to call people out. I mean, it was definitely out of line for Lane to say something to the media, and Malcolm Jenkins and Brandon Graham made it known. But the points he was making, I can't disagree with them.
Yeah, like, he's just a blunt guy. I mean, that's who he is.
Yeah,
too.
That's his personality. He's always been like that. But own up, guys. Like, this is, you guys are want to be in the Super Bowl race. Like, you can't be doing these little anonymous sources and calling each other up. Like, just own up. Look at each other in the eye. You just came off an ass kicking against your division rivals, and this is what's going on. Like, come on. This is a must-win game going into Buffalo. This team better to get it together. They better get rid of these stupid penalties. They better take care of the football and just get back to the fundamentals. Like, this team has enough talent that if you just go through the motions and catch the football and not take penalties, you will win a lot of football games. They are in position to win a lot of football games. And like you said, they're a couple catches away from being 5-2.
Literally two catches away from it. I mean, they're that close.
They're still right there. It's just, can this team own up and take control of their own destiny? Because they're going to write it. You talk about college football when it's like you got to go the rest of the way and win, and you can't have any of those letdown games. That's how I feel about this Eagles team, man. Like, yes, you can probably afford to lose the Seahawks and Patriots. Like, those are going to be tough games. But the rest of them, I have no excuse that you can't win. One against Dallas at home, two against the Giants, one against Washington, one against Miami, and then the Bears and Bills. Why can't you win those games? And even the way Seattle looked last week, why can't you beat Seattle? This team has enough in them. It just, can this leadership group get them together before this thing just is a house of cards and just completely crumbles?
Yeah, like we said yesterday, it was the same thing after that Saints game. They could either let the anonymous sourcing and the frustrations of the blowout and pointing fingers at each other, they could let that destroy them, or they could try to turn around the season. And they took the former. They turned around the season. They went 9-7. They made the playoffs, and they were a drop pass away from making the NFC Championship game. So I think leadership is the big stock down. And, you know, of course, I think the coordinators are, you know, we're already, I think Mike Groh needs to go. I think Jim Schwartz needs to go. But I think my stock down here will be on Doug Peterson. And I expect more from him. I mean, some people are, you know, pointing to Frank Reich and how he was the mastermind behind it all in 2017. And I refuse to believe that.
Kaplan
because I
put
saw
that to bed.
Yeah,
he,
exactly.
He shut somebody down. It's like, you don't even really know what.
Yeah, nobody
Reich
even
did.
Knows what Reich did. I mean, you weren't inside. So, and to me, last year, you saw the offense leaps and bounds, like how much better they looked down the stretch when they got healthy and when Doug Peterson's play calling got better. And that was without Frank Reich or John DeFilippo. And I don't know, man, like, look, I'm never one that's going to talk about Wentz versus Foles or, you know, is Foles better? Did they make a mistake or any of that stupid narratives? But I don't know, like, the play calling wise, does Doug, because this is like 2 years in a row now, and I thought a lot of it had to do with Wentz's injury last year, but does Doug just get complacent with play calling because Wentz is so talented that he just knows he's going to improv and make things happen on his own? I mean, is it because he doesn't want to make everything too simplistic for Wentz because he's just got such a higher ceiling? I don't know what it is, but the play calling, and I know it's possible. I know they can rebound with Wentz under center because, like, I refuse to forget 2017, the first 13 games of the season. So I hope that he can turn this around play calling wise, because he's just so much better than what he's been doing with running, like the analytics kind of moving away from it and getting conservative. It's just, it's not the head coach I've been used to the past 3 years.
It is definitely weird, and I talked about it to you. I mentioned it a bunch of times to bring somebody in from the outside. I wanted that to happen this offseason. I wanted it to happen last year when they were in that rut. We were talking about bringing back DeFilippo, somebody that was in, and then they left, and then bring him back. But you just have to do something, because it's not the same. And the definition of insanity is doing something over and over again, getting the same results, expecting something different, and that's what's going on right now. Like, you're not fooling me, Jim Schwartz, like, in your press conference. You're not fooling me, Mike Groh. Like, people understand what is going on in this football team. Like, we see it. We watch these games. It's not like we're dummies. Don't try to lie to us. Don't lie to yourself. Look in the mirror and say, yeah, I need to adjust. Jim Schwartz, when did we laud him last year? When he made that adjustment going into that Houston game and just absolutely played arguably the best performance we have seen Jim Schwartz. But since then, have we seen any adjustments made from him? Absolutely not. You just have to change what you are doing, because you're putting a square peg in a round hole. It's the easiest analogy to use, and that's exactly what this Eagles team is doing. Consistently putting your corners in a bad position to win, knowing that your pass rush can't get there in 2.5 seconds, continuously throwing out wide receivers on the field, putting them in a position that they can't win. Nelson Aguilar can't win down the field. Matt Collins can't beat man coverage. We're just continuing to do these things that don't make any sense. But they have it right in front of them, and they can do it, and they can make the changes. And the best wins that they've had are when they have made adjustments. Adjusting for the Super Bowl on 2 weeks to beat one of the best coordinators ever in Bill Belichick, that's an all-time coaching job by Doug Peterson. Why can't he do it again?
There's no creativity to the play calling right now, and you know, I just refuse to believe that it can't be fixed with what he is as a play caller and what they have on the field, because I've been seeing it for, you know, 2 years
now. Flashes of it, like that drive with Goddard. Like, that was beautiful.
Or against
that
Green Bay.
Drive,
I mean,
gorgeous.
There's been games this year where it's like, oh, there it is. Like, that's the offense that I know. When the offensive line gets going and Carson Wentz is on his game, and Doug Peterson, he's just kind of like, he's the play calling version sometimes of Steph Curry. When he just starts hitting them, he can't stop. And he's just play after play after play. He's he's drilling the calls. So his stock's down right now, but, you know, it's because I want to see more out of him. I don't expect Mike Groh or Jim Schwartz at this point to get any better. Even though Schwartz turned it around last year, I just have no faith in him whatsoever. Whereas Doug, like Peterson, we have seen it over and over again. And he even talks about adjusting, and he even tried it this week. I mean, he took the ball first, even though they normally always defer because the analytics say, and it's slight, but, you know, it's more in favor of you to defer and get the ball at halftime. So, you know, he adjusts, and he's the one I trust to adjust and make things right this year. We got to take one more break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When we come back, we'll take a first look at this matchup against the Buffalo Bills coming up on Sunday at 1:00 in Orchard Park, New York. Don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Eagles. All right, Eagles fans across the globe, thank you for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the podcast. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. Gino, this is a big game for me and you as people that have lived up in Buffalo. I've lived here my entire life. I was born here. It's because they're 5-1. I got a lot of family right now that's confident, that's talking trash. And, you know, that 2011 game was the first game I was ever at from an Eagles game. They came up to Buffalo. It was the dream team year. And Jaquay Parker went offsides, and they lost that football game. And much like what could happen this year, that game really took that season off the rails. And then even though they got hot, it was too little, too late. That could be the same thing to this week. And, you know, covering both teams, I work for the official Buffalo Bills radio station up here, and it's kind of a unique situation to see both sides. But being able to see both sides, me and you both, I mean, watching the Bills every single week, we understand that this is a way more winnable game than what the Bills' record shows.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this game just, I mean, I'm not going to... No, I'm going to say it. This game means more to, I think, you
it's
and
personal.
I than to, like, this game means a lot to us. And
it's a random game for everybody else, really, because it's like an AFC East team you never play.
Yeah, for every other Eagles fan, this is a game every 4 years, and every 8 years they play in Buffalo. But mm-hmm. for Lou and I, this is different. When I was in elementary school, all the kids would have their zip-up starter Bills jackets, and I would be the only kid with any Eagles stuff on. It's just like you could never talk to anybody. You would but Victory Monday, you'd be the only kid with an Eagles jersey on, and everybody in the 215, I'm sure it was great, like Eagles Victory Monday, like it's cool, like you felt that sense of belong. But here it's just like we were kind of like rogues, you know, we were just like, who the hell is an Eagles fan?
And I was known in high school as the kid that liked the Eagles, like that was my thing.
Yep. I had the Eagles lunchbox for the longest time. I actually still did for the last couple years I've worked. Yeah, but to us, we wake up and you work at WGR, you hear him talk about the Bills, we turn on the radio station, we don't have 97.5 and 94 WIP before it turned to what it is today, back in the glory days of the radio stations, but we never had that. We never had that sense of like belonging in a football community. We don't have a college team that people love. So this game is like the one time every 8 years where we feel like we are part of like a football environment. And unless we have to drive 6 hours to Philly, which I love to do more than anything in the world, this is the only time we get this. And we don't get the experience of having season tickets like a lot of other people do. I know the 4th and John guys, they're there in Philly living it up every single weekend. The Bleeding Green guys, I know a lot of them cover the team. They're closer to to Philly than we are, but it's something that we don't get. And it's going to be cool. Sunday's a cool time. This platform that we have now to reach out to a lot of fans, and it's definitely going to be an interesting game, and I'm looking forward to it. And it's going to be a tough environment. Bills fans, they are a different breed of human beings, but you're going to get heckled. They're going to hate you. They're going to be standing up first through fourth down. They're just a different breed of human beings. But this game, if we win, I get to do the lap, the victory lap, you and I, Lou, around the entire city of Buffalo. But if we lose, we have a quarter of a million people that are going to be in our ear. And it
maybe
is
I'll wear
be
my
dreadful.
I might have to wear my Eagles McCoy jersey just so maybe they'll be less mad at me if the Eagles win.
No. Everybody's always like, oh, you're going to really wear Eagles stuff? Yeah, man, I'm an Eagles fan.
100%.
Like, I don't care what environment I'm in. I'm going to support my team. I was on the Spud Cam the first time that I went to. At the time, it was Ralph Wilson Stadium back in 2011. I got this nice picture of Deshaun and Jeremy Maclin that I used as my computer background for the longest time, hoping to get up near the team and hopefully
that game
watch
was cool
the guys
too.
Practice for a bit.
That was a cool game too because Michael Vick broke the quarterback rushing record that game with a 60-yard run.
Yeah,
D-Jax
had
too.
A nice little touchdown scamper that game.
Screen to the house, yeah. So. Yep. Look, it's awesome for us because once again, I was down in Philadelphia over from 2017 to 2018. I was probably down there six different times at the draft, and me and you met at the Super Bowl party at the Fillmore. I mean, that was the coolest day of my life, being able to party downtown Philly after winning the Super Bowl. Like, never would have thought that would ever happen in my life, but like to have them come up here, to have all the Eagles fans up here, it is cool because again, like we're older now and, you know, got full-time jobs and, you know, life's up here. Don't always get to get down to Philadelphia that much. So it's cool to almost, you know, have that Eagles environment in our hometown. So I'm looking forward to it big time. And it's also why I love doing Locked On Eagles because, you know, and a lot of our listeners, I'm sure can relate to us because we do have a lot of listeners, you know, across the pond in London and, you know, different places in Europe and across the United States. So, you know, this podcast too is what really helps us feel a part of the fan base and the Eagles community. So I think it's all going to be a really fun celebration on Sunday, and hopefully we can celebrate after the game at 4-4. And, you know, Gino, much like the Jaguars game last year, I felt really good after that game at 4-4. Carson Wentz put together, I thought, his most complete game of the season, including in the fourth quarter, where he just would not let them lose that game when Jim Schwartz was giving it away. So
two similar teams, too, if you think
right?
about it.
Yeah, like, great defenses.
Like middle-of-the-road quarterback with a really good defense. It's a very similar feel going into this game. I'm literally having flashbacks sitting in the room that I'm podcasting into last year when we were talking about interviewing Liam Jenkins for that London week because he's out there across the pond. And we were talking about the same exact thing. So
exactly.
This team, they've been worse. We've seen them. We've seen the 4-12 seasons. This team isn't in as bad shape as many people think. Yes,
I refuse to believe this is 2015 or 2011. I think this has got to be a lot closer to 2018.
There are cracks in the foundation for sure, but they have the ability to fill those cracks in. They've done it before. This isn't the first time that they faced adversity. just do it again. I'm waiting for them to own up, and if they're going to take control of their destiny, like I said, now is the week to do so. And coming into Buffalo, it's going to be a fun game on Sunday, a very winnable game, a very, very winnable game. You look at Buffalo's offense. I mean, you talk about Josh Allen's arm. The best throw he had last week was arguably the throw when he tried to throw it out of the stadium. I mean, that was a picture they put on the front of the newspaper. He has a big arm, but he can't throw the ball downfield. So a team that likes to keep things underneath, an offense that likes to get Josh in a rhythm and get him in those intermediate areas, in those short areas, it's going to be a good test for this Eagles defense. We'll see if they do anything to fill in those cracks before then. Let's hope. I mean, not a practice squad move. I can't take another Philadelphia Eagles notification saying that it's a practice squatter that we signed from another team.
Yeah,
I need something that's going to solidify that this next week is going to be a win. And there are plenty of moves that they can do that. And this Eagles team, I believe in them still. I'm not jumping off the wagon. I never will. I'm still going to wear my jersey on Sunday. I'm still going to go to the game. I'm still going to sing Fly Eagles Fly. Nothing's going to change. It's just, do you believe in this team? And I still do. I'm not going to fall to the reactionary narrative that they're a bad team. The Cowboys just lost to the freaking Jets, who got embarrassed last night on national television, not even 9 days ago. Like, let's not think that this division is completely out of reach.
Absolutely, and we'll get deeper into the X's and O's of the matchup between the Eagles and the Bills tomorrow, Thursday, and then on Friday or Saturday, we're going to have a podcast, too, hopefully with two special guests. So we got a fun week coming up here in Buffalo. Eagles take on the Bills Sunday at 1 o'clock. So tomorrow we'll have Joe Marino on, should be, of Locked On Bills, and then Thursday we're going to have Derek Kramer of WGR Sports Radio 550, which is the official Buffalo Bills affiliate radio station up here in Western New York. So a fun one. The Eagles, look, it'd be more fun if they were 4-3, but this is an opportunity to turn around the season. It's really a breaking point, much like last year was after that Saints game. Do you let everything that's happening destroy your season, or do you turn it around? And I still believe this is closer to 2018 than 2011 or 2015. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you for joining Gino Camilleri and myself, Louis DiBiase. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on any podcast provider, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, you name it, we're on there. Also on LockedOnEagles.com, and the conversation always continues on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino_LOE. That's going to do it for Gino Camilleri. I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly Eagles Fly.